The book of Mark is found in the New Testament in the Bible. And in the chapter of 12, the story of Jesus is picking up speed. The words and teaching of Jesus are getting him into trouble, and the religious leaders are actively looking for a way to arrest him. They try in vain to trap him in his own words, but even insincere questions are answered with wisdom and grace that teaches us to this day. So listen to the word of God from Mark 12, verses 28 through 34. One of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating, and noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked him, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" "The most important one," answered Jesus, "is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this: love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these." "Well said, teacher," the man replied. "You are right in saying that God is one and there is no other but him. To love him with all your heart, with all your understanding, and with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself is more important than all burnt offerings and sacrifices." When Jesus saw that he had answered wisely, he said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." And from then on, no one dared ask him any more questions.
Hi, I'm Bob. I'm one of the pastors here at the Meeting Place. How are you this morning? So, we've been tracking Jesus for a while. He's arrived in Jerusalem. He's following his father's instructions. He's just a little time away from ending his ministry on earth. Well, one of the favorite things of Jesus was to teach. So everywhere he goes, he finds that crowds gather around him because he has important things to say. They're often blessed by what he says, sometimes mystified, sometimes confronted. And so here we have this occasion where once again Jesus is standing with a number of teachers of the law. These are people who are pretty smart and they know some things, and they're asking him questions, not always with a good attitude, I think sometimes trying to trip him up. So here's Jesus, and he's in the circle, and he's teaching, and he's doing his thing, and as Stephen read to us, this one man steps up and he says, "Jesus, listen. All of these rules and all of these laws that we need to follow," and there were 613 of them, if you can imagine. He's turned to Jesus and he says, "Listen, I think I need something a little bit more user-friendly," right? How often do we want to just cut through the fog of all the complexity of life? Just give us the center. Just give us the most important. And so this is the question. Can you imagine the heart of Jesus in that moment? He's thinking to himself, "This is a great question. I'm looking forward to answering this question." And what's incredibly powerful for us is that we know that the words that Jesus spoke in those days still have significance to us today. And so I don't know about you, but I'm sort of curious about what it is that Jesus will have said in that moment to this group of people that he's standing with. Well, it's interesting, because the words that Jesus chooses to speak to say, "This is the first commandment, this is the most important thing," are words that he's actually not even the author of. He's quoting the Old Testament. He's quoting out of Deuteronomy chapter 6. So just to give you a little history on where this text comes from, where these words that Jesus chooses in that moment come from. The Israelites had left 400 years of slavery in Egypt. They were traveling through the wilderness on their way to the Promised Land. Moses has gone up onto the mountain to spend some time with God. He's coming down the mountain with the Ten Commandments that he's received directly from God, comes to the foot of the mountain. The people are waiting with some curiosity as to what it is that he might have to say and what is it that he's experienced. And so he comes to the bottom of the mountain and he first encounters the people. Here are the words that he speaks, given to him by God. It says this: "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your hearts, with all your soul, and with all your strength." If you look at the text, there are instructions that follow that literally say, "This is so important, this is so critical for you to grasp that you must and you should feel compelled to pass this on to the next generation. Make sure that you tell your children about this. In fact, this is so important. You should do everything that you can to make sure that you are reminded of these words. Every day you should encounter these as a way to remind you of what is most important. And the people who are devout followers of the Jewish faith tradition would speak these words every morning and every evening to practice this. So when Jesus speaks these words to this group that's gathered in Jerusalem on that particular day, what he's saying to them are not words that are unfamiliar. These are not new words, but what he's teaching them and reminding them of are words that were spoken way back when, and likely this particular group of people will have been the ones to practice this, to pray this every morning and every evening, so they would be familiar. But do you think it's possible that as Jesus speaks these words in that particular setting, that perhaps they thought to themselves, you know what, over time, as we've memorized these words and spoken them almost out of habit and pattern, we've lost the heart. We've lost at what's at the center, the meaning of this text. And more even than that, one of the things that happened is because Jesus identified himself as the Son of God, and he teaches with that kind of authority, they would have been confronted by the reality that not only is Jesus speaking here about his Father God, who issued these words way back in Deuteronomy, trusted them into Moses, to Moses for him to share with the people, but that Jesus himself is saying, listen, as you observe me, as you spend time with me, as you hear what I have to say to you, you're discovering the Father. I am connected to him. Listen to me. This is really important. This is pretty powerful. So, there's another instruction. Interestingly enough, what is the greatest commandment? It has two parts. The other part is love your neighbor as yourself. Again, these are words that Jesus chooses. They are, once again, not the words in the moment, but now he's quoting from another text. This one is found in Leviticus. What's happened is that as the Israelites have left Egypt and they're on their way to the Promised Land, it turns out they're on an extended camping trip. You see, there's 2 million of them, which is, I know, hard to imagine. There's livestock, there's all kinds of things going on, and they are under, like they're leaving slavery and they're heading towards the Promised Land, and they're nomads and they're traveling, and like God knew, right, that this community was going to be, you know, subject to all kinds of conflict. Can you imagine what it would be like to live in close quarters for a long period of time and with all the livestock around and all this kind of stuff and all the, you know, getting up and packing up and moving and so on like that? And so God gives some instructions in Leviticus very deliberately to say, I'm going to help you to figure out how to be community with one another. You see, the thing that's happening is that these people have been in slavery for so long, they have lost their sense of identity. They no longer understand that they are people that are to be the people of God. They probably have been so consumed by Egyptian culture while they've spent time there that they've lost their sense of who he is, and so he's reintroducing himself to his people to help them understand what it's really about. And so in this instance, once again, there are instructions that come from God in Leviticus very deliberately about how to be good neighbors. In Leviticus, we find this text about what it means to be good neighbors, and it says this: do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against your neighbor or against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. So essentially, there are two parts to this. On one hand, don't do anything to do harm to your neighbor. But the other part, obviously, is not only should you avoid not doing harm or should avoid doing harm, but you should also love your neighbor. Now, notice the limitation here. The limitation in this Leviticus passage is very much directed towards the people that are gathered. So it's about Israelites receiving the instruction to be good neighbors to other Israelites, right? Because of this extended adventure that they're on. By the time Jesus quotes these words in Mark chapter 12, on that particular day, he takes out that limitation. It is now love your neighbor as yourself. There's no longer this limit about it being directed to people who are like you or who belong part to your faith or to your tribe or any of those kinds of things. So here we have what essentially are the most important words that Jesus has ever spoken. These are essential words. These are the words that would inform people about how it is that they are to live. So what might these words mean to us today? Well, let's go back to the love the Lord your God passage. Now, it's interesting, in the Deuteronomy passage, it says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. By the time Jesus speaks these words in Mark, he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength. And so this made me curious. Now, I don't know about you in terms of your understanding of these words, but the thing that draws my attention right away is the soul parts. And for some reason, from when I was little, I always assumed that the soul was a relatively small part of me. It was buried somewhere deep within me. It was the part that had an eternal value. It would live beyond my physical body. It wouldn't show up on an x-ray. It's not part of my organs, but it would be there, but it would be sort of buried somewhere deep inside. So imagine my surprise with this perspective. 2 years ago, Hildy and I were able to go to a conference where John Ortberg was one of the speakers, and he had just finished writing a book called Soul Keeping. And here's the book. Now, no, we don't have copies at the Info Center. I know you're going to go and ask. But here's the thing. Hildy and I feel that we've kept Amazon alive for the last 2 years. That's not really true, but you know what I'm saying. We've bought a lot of these books and given them out as gifts because we were so profoundly moved and informed about what it means to have a soul and what that's all about that we've been influenced by John Ortberg's writings and some of his discoveries. So I highly recommend this book. John Ortberg speaks and says, let me try to explain to you as I've looked at Scripture and studied it, all these pieces. And so I want to show these to you. And for those of you that are keeping notes, I think as you draw these diagrams, I'll add some words that you can add into the margin. So here we go. We start with the center, which is our will. Now, our will is the part of us that is able to say yes or no. It's the decision-making part. The will wants to be in charge, but the will is very limited. The will isn't particularly good at managing patterns and habits or overcoming habits and attitudes. It has a difficult time. It's actually not a very powerful part of us. That's the will. Then there's another circle. The next part is our mind. Our mind, this is where our thoughts and our feelings and our attitudes reside. I don't have to say much about this, but you discover very quickly that your mind has the capacity to think not only very good thoughts and have good attitude and have good feelings, but it certainly also has the possibility of doing all of those things, but the bad side of those things. There is conflict within our minds. Our will isn't particularly strong. Our mind is in conflict. In fact, our mind longs for peace. If you ever stayed up late at night or you wake up in the middle of the night, you find yourself a little anxious, it's because your mind is not at peace. You're wrestling with things. There are things that you're trying to sort out. So your mind is longing for peace. And then there's another part. This is your body. Your body is the size of the little kingdom that your will rules. And your will really feels like it's in charge of something very important. But the will very quickly discovers that there are things that are happening to your body that the will doesn't get to decide. So the will is actually even more limited, but it really has authority in a very small part in this world as all part of creation. It's a little frustrating. These three parts of us are often in conflict. Do you ever find yourself, as I do, doing things, and right while I'm doing them, I'm thinking, I'm not really wanting to do this. I'm not really enjoying this at all. Do you ever find that you're able to make decisions that you know are harmful to your body, and yet somehow you carry on? It doesn't matter. Your will and your minds, by the way, outsource what they want to see happen to your body. They direct your body and say, drive us there. Put this in your mouth. Do these things. And so there is this relationship, but it's in conflict. It's not in harmony. There are issues with that. So where is the soul in all of this? Well, this is where John Ortberg's presentation blew my mind, because this is where the soul goes. The soul captures the whole of us. It is all of us. The soul desires nothing more than having all of the parts of us work in perfect harmony. The soul is looking for perfect integration. The soul wants us to be people of integrity. It wants all of the things to belong together and fit together and work together in perfect harmony. The soul is about these things. The other parts of us are often in disharmony because, here's the bad news, we live in a world, in a setting where the messages we receive are mostly directed at you as an individual, as me as an individual. The individual is the highest, it's the pinnacle of all things. Right? Our opinions matter, that people respect us matters, that we have particular convictions that we own matters. That is the highest goal. It creates a lot of conflict, because imagine how many individuals are here today. If we all believe that we as individuals matter most, we cannot possibly even interact with one another. So our world would invite us to invest in yourself. Think about the language we use. Find it within yourself. Be all that you can be. All of those things don't actually lead you to a very good place, because at the end of the day, you discover, I don't have the stuff within me to get harmony. I don't know how to accomplish this. My life doesn't make sense, and I require my investment not to be directed at myself, but is to be directed at my soul. If I am deliberate about investing in my soul, the pieces of me can begin to work in harmony. But all the messages we receive, or many of the messages we receive, would be in conflict with that. Soul care, my friends, is the thing. No wonder John Ortberg's book is called Soul Keeping. He's asking us to invest very deliberately in our soul. What does this look like? Well, the instructions, according to Jesus, are these. Love the Lord your God with all of you. This is unfamiliar to us. In our lifetime, we rarely commit all of ourselves to anything. We're always holding in reserve. Perhaps this could get this much attention or this much of us, but it's not going to get all of us. We're going to hold it. Now we've got this invitation to be all fully invested in the cause of God. This is something that we need to wrestle with. What does it look like for us to do this? And here is the interesting thing. We're reluctant to do it. You know why? Because we serve other gods all the time. The god of money, the god of success, the god of fame. These gods get our allegiances, but those gods don't ask us to be in a love relationship. Those gods hold us in bondage. They hold us hostage. So when God introduces himself to the Israelites, when Jesus repeats to the teachers, this is the greatest law, what he's saying is, I want to tell you about a God who is looking for you to love him. This is incredible. This literally sets him apart. No wonder he's described as the Lord and the One. He's unique in that regard. If we choose, we can declare. Notice the saying is, love the Lord your God. It's a lordship that we get to recognize. We get to decide to say, yes, Lord, I want you, Jesus, to be the Lord of my life. I want you to have all of me. And as we direct all of ourselves towards him, we actually create that soul-keeping thing I'm speaking about. What does it look like if we say, Jesus, I don't have within me the capacity to transform my will to something that would serve the best purposes of yours and to make my life the greatest for me to make decisions that are in keeping with your will. But if we say, would you shape our will? What would happen if we say, God, would you shape our minds? I would love to have the default setting of having good thoughts and good feelings and good attitudes and not default to the darkness that are off name. Aren't you and I confronted by the kinds of things we're capable of thinking about? Aren't you happy that often you have just enough willpower not to act on those things? I've never yet had someone raise their hand when I say to them, how would you like somebody to plug a wire into the back of your brain and for your thoughts to appear on the screen right now? And you went up for it. Good news, we don't have the technology. But think about it. Think about our humanity, right? There's stuff about us that we're not particularly proud of. What if we submit these things and say, God, these are yours. You shape them. You transform them. What if my body, my physical presence in this world is influenced and shaped by who he is? Love the Lord your God with all of you is soul care of the highest order. And it changes our life into something. But we have to take the risk of saying, we want you to be Lord and you can have all of us. No reservations. The second part is love your neighbor as yourself. Now, what does this mean? Think about this for just a second. you got up this morning. Perhaps you live with other people in your household, so you would have met them. You would have jumped into a car, perhaps with other people. Maybe you came here by bus. You would have sat on the bus with other people. Maybe you walked here this morning. You were walked down the sidewalk past other people or with other people. When you arrived here, you saw our security people. You came to our greeters. Perhaps an usher brought you to your seat. And right now, you're sitting in a place where you're surrounded by people. We've had a lot of neighbor opportunities already. You see, Jesus, in speaking to this group of people that is gathered in the Gospel of Mark, says, love your neighbor as yourself, and there's no limit on who your neighbors are, so think about who all your neighbors are. And I want to give you a heads up so you're not surprised. But in a few minutes, this service is going to end. And then when it's all quiet on stage, all you're going to be left with is neighbors. So brace yourself. So here's the thing. What does it look like for us to love our neighbors as ourselves? I want to give you just one very practical suggestion. While I'm standing here and while you're sitting there, I am quite sure that you can think of a word of encouragement or perhaps a word of affirmation or perhaps a Bible verse or perhaps some kind of acknowledgement, perhaps like an act of service that you would love to receive. Something that you could receive right in this moment. You could picture what that might be. What is the thing that would most just attend to you? It would, like, name your circumstances and somehow lift you up and lift your spirits and just make you feel better about life circumstances. Can you think of such a thing? I know I can. So in this moment, because it's love your neighbor as yourself, what if, just to put this into practice, I suggest to you that whatever it is that you can name right now that you would love to receive, extend it to somebody near you, whoever that may be. Now, you may need to be discerning about what it is that you offer, but what I'm saying is, what if you invest the thing that you most long to receive to a person, the next neighbor that you would identify? Do you think that would bless them? Do you think that would actually make a difference? And guess what? You would have just put into practice, love your neighbor as yourself. In some ways, you're saying, this is something that could really help me in my human circumstances, and I'd love to just bless somebody else with that. And perhaps you'll receive it back. But that's not really the driving force, because it's just about the investment in the neighbor. The greatest commandment. These are essential words of Jesus. He speaks them to this group that he's with. He speaks these words. They're familiar to them from the Old Testament. These guys would know their stuff. Jesus speaks them. They're confronted by this. But this guy who asked Jesus in the first place, what is in fact the most important thing? He says to Jesus, that's a good job, Jesus. I really like those words. I think you're right. What you just said makes a lot of sense to me. It makes a lot of sense in our circumstances. I think you're right. You're onto something. And Jesus responds and says to him, you're very close. You almost got it. And I have to be honest with you, I'm a little frustrated because I'm thinking, no, this guy, he's got it. He's asked the question, he received the answer, and he really understands. I think this guy, he's doing the thing. But there is a piece that's missing. Now, this is interesting. These words that we're reading in the Gospel of Mark appear in the Gospel of Matthew and also in the Gospel of Luke. In Luke, they appear in a slightly different scenario where Jesus is the one to ask the question. He turns to a person and says, tell me, what do you think is the most important thing in all of the laws? And this person's response is to say, love the Lord your God, and so on, and love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus' response to that person says, do this and live. Do this and live. This last week, Hildy's baking bread. Thank Jesus for fresh baked bread. Hildy's making bread. I hear her. She says, uh-oh. I go into the kitchen to see what's happening. Well, she's added a few too many ingredients in the bowl. Now she has to add a whole lot of more ingredients to make sure that the ratios are right. So in the end, when she's done baking, there are now 3 loaves of bread as opposed to only 2. I'm thinking, this isn't a problem. We'll stick it in a bag, shove it in the freezer. It'll be fine. Hildy turns to me and she goes, oh, no, this is going to our neighbors. I get the rubber boots. I don't know where you live, but in my neighborhood, we don't have curbs or storm sewers. All of our water runoff is surface, and there's lakes, all kinds of places. So I'm ready. I'm equipped. I get the basket, put the bread in it, a little towel over top, and I march off to the neighbor's. I get to the first house, I ring the doorbell, there's no answer. Well, where am I going to go? Well, I'm going to go to the other neighbor's. I've got to walk through two lakes to get over there. I'm not kidding you. Like, I'm concerned. I'm walking across the street, I'm walking through these puddles. I get to the front door of this house. These are people that have only moved in the last number of years. We don't know them very well yet. I get there, she throws open the door. She says, I've been standing at my window, I've been watching you walking over here, like, what is this about? And I lift the towel, and there is the most wonderful smell wafting in the air of this fresh, this thing is still warm. It's incredible. And I said to her, here's the thing, Hildy baked bread, she made one too many loaves. It's going to go to one of our neighbors. If you would like it, it could be yours. Of course, they gladly received it. There's a little family gathering. You know how you reintroduce yourself after we all come out of the dark caves, you know, step into the sunlight in the spring. So we do this little bit of catching up and so on like that, and I leave the bread with them, and I turn around, and I'm just about walking down the steps, and as the door falls shut, I hear a voice far inside the house. It's a man, and he says, I would love to live in a neighborhood like this. Imagine the reports I could bring back to Hildy. Here she was concerned about the mistake that she had made while she was mixing ingredients, and it turned into this incredible blessing. I would love to live in a neighborhood like this. My friends, we can do it. We can do this. We can do this. So we have three postures here. We can be part of the crowd that's listening in. I sometimes encourage you, if you want to understand a Bible passage, immerse yourself in it. Step into it. Become a character in that story. So as you're standing there with this group of people and Jesus is teaching, you can picture yourself, are you a person that's just listening in? Like some of them who never said another word. And as people ask you this coming week, how was church on Sunday? It was nice. Or you could be like the man who asked the question because you're curious, you're a learner, you want to collect knowledge. You want to understand. And perhaps you've learned something. Perhaps you've written something down this morning. But according to Jesus, you're close. But in Luke, he offers the third posture, which says, do this and live. If you really want to live, my friends, if you really want to have a life that matters, if you want to live the best version of all that you are, if you want to literally invest your entire soul, I'm telling you, there's only one way. There's only one way. We can do this. I beg you to make this decision. Would you make Jesus the Lord of your life? Would you love out of the richness of what that offers? Can you imagine what this world could look like? It would be amazing. My friends, I want to bless you with the greatest and the best soul keeping that you've ever done.
Well, Bob.
Well, Wayne.
I'm going to amalgamate two questions together. How does one love your neighbor if you really struggle with loving yourself and struggle with just good boundaries?
I knew there were going to be hard questions. The truth of the matter is that we cannot give what we don't have. When your accounts are empty, and this happens in life, where our accounts are empty, where it feels like we're depleted, we just simply can't serve, then it's not necessarily a healthy thing in that moment to try to overreach and try to pretend that we're in the place to give to others. There are times when I think we have to provide soul care for ourselves and make that the priority. If we follow the example of Jesus, there are lots of references, including in the Gospel of Mark, where he finds himself first thing in the morning, sort of off in a quiet place, just spending time with his Father, receiving from him so that he can pour out over the course of the day. So if this is a struggle for you, what it does is it illustrates the disharmony that exists in within our will, our mind, our body. There are things that just aren't working particularly well together, and as much as we try, our will finds itself exhausted often because it's trying to accomplish something that it can't. So if you discover that there is need for you to find healing, then I ask you to do soul care. Turn to God and say, God, could you heal me of this? Talk with people. Seek help of counselors, people whose wisdom you trust. Allow them to speak into your life circumstances. So out of the soul care that you receive, you can become the loving person that you're hoping for.
So let me follow up on that, because I think that maybe for many people, your statement about that the soul, my soul wants harmony, mm-hmm. might be a new concept. But if my soul wants harmony, why does it seem I do everything to sabotage living in peace? So can you say more about how can I change this pattern, right? I mean, yeah. you mentioned a few more things, but flesh it out a little yeah. bit more.
Well, this is the truth. I don't know about you. I've shared with you before. I'm overwhelmed by my humanity. There are certain things that I want to be about, and there are certain things that I believe that I could be about, and then I find that I get in the way. I'm often in the way of these things that I'm hoping to see. Do I want to love like Jesus loves? Absolutely. Am I able to do that? Well, there are parts of me that are still not devoted to him. There are parts of him that, for some reason, I want to cling to. And I think part of it is because the messages we're receiving over and over again is, no, it's about you. It's about, like, literally elevating the individual to the highest level. And if I do that, if I spend a lot of time focusing on me and trying to make me better, if you want, by my own efforts, I find myself in this place where I can't find peace. I'm not going to create harmony. I don't have the tools to do it. I have to turn to God, and there's a submission that's required, which I think is an ongoing submission. But here's the thing. If you talk to a person that's been a Christ follower for a long time, they can speak to you about these things. They can sometimes say, you know that autopilot that tends to get us into trouble? My autopilot is set on good, because I've been about it for so long that it's almost like the obedience has taken over and has directed my path. And when I hear that, I'm encouraged to believe that as I continue in my journey, that that could become true for me.
What's a very brief response to this question? Someone asked, well, in the pictogram, where's the spirit? You got the will, mind, body, soul, but where is the spirit?
Well, part of it is probably language. The Old Testament, people would have understood certain components of a person. Jesus expands it to a list of four. The spirit will be amongst the ones that are named. It's not yet a separate piece. When we talk about spirit, there are different ways that we experience each other's spirit. Sometimes it has to do with the mood, the attitude that we're experiencing with the person. And so it's contained within the will and the mind. So it's not a standalone piece, but it's there. When we speak about the spirit and the presence of the spirit in our lives, our clearest reference to a spirit would be the Holy Spirit, who's given to us as a gift by the Father to remind us that we are his and that he seeks to work in us.
You blessed us a few minutes ago, so I bless you in your soul care, my friend. Thank you. The fact that someone can ask this first question is one of the reasons why I love about the meeting place and what God is doing here. I am an addict and an alcoholic, also a sinner that has spent years in jail and broken many commandments. Will Jesus still accept me and give me another chance at life with him?
What's the answer, my friends?
Yes! Yes!
It's true. Sorry.
Oh. Don't apologize.
See how small my will is? It can't control my emotions. Yes, the good news, and this is the thing that boggles our minds. You see, because we live in a world that's about keeping scales and keeping the accounts just right. Think about it. Think about how many relationships, even, that should all be about love are about point keeping. Right? In this instance, the thing that God offers is it's ridiculous, really, when you think about it. Because he's saying, listen, I'm going to give you a chance, even at the very end of your days. I need to add this illustration. If you ever wonder about this, we're going to hear about this soon because Easter is coming. On the cross, besides Jesus, there were two others also crucified. They were crucified for the worst criminal acts of the day. Crucifixion was like literally the worst thing. One of them, clearly bitter and angry, has lived his entire life probably in a very dark place, cannot see his way to Jesus. But the other is hanging on the cross, and he turns to Jesus and he says, Jesus. Well, you have to read it for yourself, what he exactly says, because I don't remember the exact words. But bottom line is, he acknowledges Jesus. And Jesus says to him, today you will be in my paradise. This guy is hanging on a cross. He cannot come off of that piece of wood and cannot do one more good thing in his entire life to make it right. He has to live with the consequences of his poor choices. And even though there's only a trail of destruction in this, Jesus says to him, because you've turned to me, you will share in my eternal kingdom. If that's not an encouragement to us, then I don't know what it is. Your sin will not keep you out of the presence of God. It will not keep you. It just won't.
I find I'm always loving and giving love with nothing in return. It's very discouraging. How do I carry on with loving when I don't feel loved myself?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that that's your story. It breaks my heart. You know what? I would encourage you to do what I did. I receive love from all kinds of places. But I think I've shared this with you before. I have a number of mentors in my life. One of my mentors, I sat with him and I said, George, your only role is to love me. I would love to just be with you and you provide care for me because I need just someone to care. He's been in leadership and pastoral leadership for a lot of years, so he could speak into my circumstances. And George and I meet regularly, and all he does is he cares for me. Now, it's become a two-way street because I can't help but care for him because he cares so much for me. I would encourage you, would you identify somebody in your life? Find somebody. Maybe you need to find a new friend and say, this is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for somebody who will love me and speak words of encouragement. We are deserving of that. I think we are.
For all of the ways that you care for our souls in this place and your teaching and your presence, we thank you. And I am so thankful for the ways that you care for me and my soul. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Amazon. My friends, it is just possible that while you've sat here, you have decided to reorder your life for the compassionate cause of Jesus. And if that's true, it'd be great if you would tell somebody. It's always good to say out loud what perhaps has happened inside just as a way of confirming it. There will be people at the front of the stage just waiting to talk with you. Not only that, but also to just engage with you and talk and pray with you about things that are real for you. We want to care for you. We want to be there to love neighbors as we have been instructed. So I bless you again with the best soul keeping that you could possibly pursue. Go with Jesus.